Note the sermon title. Have you ever experienced the test for your field of vision? Have you ever had to go through that? Not that it's onerous or anything. I'm not talking about the big E eye chart. I'm not talking about that tunnel tube thing you have to look through when you go to the Ministry of Transportation for your driver's test. I had to go to a couple of ophthalmologists and a couple of neurologists and a variety of other folks about seven and a half years ago, having a problem with my left eye. It was shutting down. So they had to figure out what was going on. They had to rule out all sorts of things. Well, one ophthalmologist said, we're going to do a field of vision test. Okay. So they sit you down. They covered this eye with a patch. I'm staring at quite a large cylinder, like a disc, a big white disc. And there's a little light in the middle of it. And they said, just stare at that little light with the eye we haven't covered. Okay. And when you see a little pinprick of light come up anywhere on that disc, push the button. Okay. Off I went, watching for my little pinpricks of light to come up. And that was fine. And then they switched the patch to cover this eye, the one that works. And I turned to the technician and I said, okay, when are you going to turn the little light on in the middle? She just patted my shoulder and said, do the best you can. The test isn't about accuracy of sight. It isn't about seeing things clearly. It is about the scope of one's sight. What is within your sight? What are you able to see? And as well, what are you not able to see? What are your limits? The other question when we're talking about vision is, what is one ready to see? The story goes that when the three ships of Christopher Columbus first anchored offshore, before they even ventured on to start exploring, the natives came down to the beach, not because they were worried about these ships, but because there was a change to the wave pattern on their shore. They couldn't see the ships. There they were. They weren't trying to hide. But they couldn't conceive of a boat that big. They couldn't conceive of another land far off, beyond the horizon that they could see. They couldn't conceive of other people that would look so different to them. So they could not see the ships right in front of them. It took a few days, before one of their leaders, studying the different way the water was coming in now, in just one part of their shoreline, He finally connected that difference to those objects, and he could see the ships. They simply weren't ready for them. Jesus took three disciples up a high mountain, Peter, James, and John, only those three. Jesus often went away from the group to private places, to lofty places, to pray, to commune with God, to rest from the constant needs of the crowds that followed him everywhere. This time, he brought three close companions, his most trusted companions. Why? This time he just suddenly felt like having company? Because Jesus wanted witnesses to what he knew was about to happen? Because he understood that they needed to witness his transfiguration to steel their conviction for the ministry ahead? Why now? The Christian calendar titles one day a year, today, to be Transfiguration Sunday. And this scripture is read every time. And it's actually part of the lead up to Lent and Easter. This event in Jesus' life occurred just a few weeks before he was greeted with that beautiful, joyous palm procession into Jerusalem. But we truly don't know if this had happened before. Jesus often sought time alone. He removed himself from the disciples to remote places. According to Matthew's record here, Jesus wasn't startled or surprised to chat with Moses and Elijah. This was normal for him. Apparently, they got together regularly. Neither did Jesus seem to react to the change in his own appearance. The Greek word is actually metamorphosis. That's not an English version. That's the Greek. Even though all of these other details, his face shone, his clothing was as white as light or dazzling in some translations, we have these details, but there's nothing about Jesus' reaction to this. He seems perfectly fine with it. Perhaps because this is his natural state. The full glory from which he came, the obvious greatness and power that he has to conceal to live with mortals. But Christ's true nature transcends any of the limits of time and space, as do the freed spirits of Moses and Elijah. So they meet as divine beings, which is absolutely terrifying to the mortals that are present. But this time, they're invited to see it. This time, these three are deemed ready to see the full glory of Christ in communion with the law and the prophets represented by Moses and Elijah. We have no idea what they talked about. But it may have been part of Jesus' readying, his personal spiritual preparation for his final weeks on earth, because he knew his ministry was coming to an end. following this event, the healing Messiah seems to step back, and the preaching Christ is the focus. His teaching becomes quite strong and pointed after this. He teaches on sin and grace and relationships and his church. He will need strong and steadfast friends. He will need their faith at his side. But he also needs to secure the legacy and the ministry of faith when the Jesus resurrected returns to his divine home. Jesus' transfiguration happens in front of them, as Matthew records, because they were ready to see it. They couldn't have seen it 3 years before, when the ministry started, when they were first called. It's too much to take in. But now they were ready. Not only are they ready to see it, but seeing it readies them for what is to come. Sometimes we miss things until we are ready to see what's right in front of us. The parents of an old boyfriend of mine are extremely musical. He was incredibly musical, still is, but we're still friends. His parents started their relationship as a musical duo. She played the piano. He was usually on some kind of horn, trumpet, saxophone. And that's how they knew each other. They never once went on a date, ever. They didn't have their first kiss until they were engaged, because it was so natural for them to be together. Finally, one night after a gig, he turned to her and said, "So I guess we should get married." And they've been together for at least 50 years by now. But it was right in front of them. Their companionship, their trust, their respect, the way they complemented each other's gifts. It was right in front of them for a few years. But until they were ready to see it, they never went ahead with any kind of relationship other than musical. So how do we get ready? How does it happen? How did the disciples become ready to see something they didn't know was coming? We're not talking about readying for a test at school or something. They didn't know this was coming. How did it start? They were fishermen. They changed their whole lives to follow him because they trusted him. They listened and they watched. For those 3 years, they allowed themselves to be led, which is something human beings aren't genuinely really good at. We are taught all of our lives to stand up, take care of yourself, be self-sufficient, learn to think independently. And yet, they put all of that aside to absolutely trust and be led. Wow. I'm not sure we can understand that kind of relationship where you're 100% in somebody else's hands. Because of that, Jesus could show them his authentic self that nobody else had seen. I had to go through a big change in my life to become a minister. I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty details, but I barely attended church. I was one of those CEOs, Christmas and Easter only, pretty well, for most of my 20s. It wasn't until I got the whack upside the head, and I'm not being facetious, that's what it felt like, did I think about changing my life and following, trying to follow. We're all just trying our best to follow. It wasn't until I agreed. God and I fought about this for a long time, almost a full year, of call somebody else. You got the wrong girl. Call somebody else. No, was my answer for months and months. As I say, almost a full year. It wasn't until I finally said, okay, that I learned to trust. When I agreed to trust him, that he could take me wherever he wanted to, I'm not kidding, my vision changed. I described it to people as whites are whiter and brights are brighter. It was as if the whole world came into sharper focus. All of the colors became more intense. Wish I were kidding, but that's what happened. I couldn't see perfectly, and I'm far from perfect. But because I agreed to trust more, he could show me things that I'd been missing. He could show me things that I was missing in the Bible, in the world around me, in society, in myself, that I didn't want to see. He could show it to me, and I wouldn't react with fear. I might not like it, but I wasn't afraid of anything anymore. How do you read these verses? Go back and read them again. This is the transfiguration of Jesus. This is the revealing of his glory for mortals. What do you see in this event that I very likely missed in these last several minutes? Because there's something he's going to show just you in this scripture. He's going to enlarge your field of vision and show you what you need to see, what he wants you to see. Because not only are you ready for more, he's readying us all the time for a future ahead that we can't even see yet. But that's okay. He can see it. It's hard to trust. It's hard to trust when we're used to being in control of making all of our own decisions. I encourage us all. I encourage myself. Trust as much as possible. Because the field of vision, what we see, just gets better and clearer and more beautiful and more challenging. Keep your eyes open. Keep your heart open.